No, I'm not seriously drunk for this. So.
Oh, was that drunk?
I was thinking,
which cantina creature is he doing?
That's right. Is that Sergio Kalfas? The
either that or I was getting ready to text.
No, it was actually Herchek Kalfas. Gotcha.
It was that or I was going to text Catherine. I was like, hey, go in the other room and check on Cole. I think something's wrong.
it's finally hit.
Poor guy. The stress of 100 episodes of the live show and 75 of the pre-recorded shows finally caught up to him. Oh my god!
It's bound to happen eventually. Yes. Well, welcome, as a matter of fact, to the 74th episode of the Rantcore Pit.
Yeah, on the eve of both our milestones.
Yeah, we kind of worked it out thanks to the force of July.
Uh-huh.
I'm Jedi Cole Houston, and of course
Eddie Medina.
And yeah, that was my poor attempt at playing drunk. I haven't done that in years, so.
You need to go
used to be more convincing, apparently, but, you know.
You need to, channel your inner Arthur Bach, you know, your Dudley Moore.
Oh, yes.
That was like the...
Or in this case, Arthur Bosk.
Oh. Yeah, I can see that. And why would it be that? Why would it be Bosk? Well, Bosk was...
Just to tie it in.
True, that's true.
But, yeah, we are on the 74th episode of the show. We're about to hit another big milestone. And, yes, we know we're 25 behind the live show, which is younger.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not as good self-imposed whipcrackers as we are when we're trying to do that live show. Because we had to fill those two Sundays every month. And
mm-hmm.
It's just like, well, we can get around the week or two or five, and so
it's a problem when you're your own boss and manager on the audio show. Is like you allow yourself more leniency than when you have answer to a station manager.
We're just very soft on ourselves. So we are here as we wrap up the 4th of July, four episodes, which ironically worked out perfectly for us to be hitting dual milestones or dual the fates milestones between the two. I'm not sure tie everything into Star Wars tonight.
Right.
But the
you're gonna TIE Fighter everything in together.
Oh, there you go. See, right. This is a good way to drive people away before we hit that milestone. But we are basically in discussing what we'd like to talk about. Eddie made the realization that we've talked extensively about Jabba's Palace. We've done a whole episode on Jabba's Palace, which is, of course, one of the iconic set pieces. But we haven't done the same for Mos Eisley Cantina, which is one of my personal favorite. That was just the coolest thing ever.
Right. We think, because when you've done, between the two shows, you've done 175 episodes plus a dozen other special standalone at convention episodes. Or several dozen, if you can count our live appearances, you start to forget what you've talked about. So when you add them all together, we've hit over 200 Rancor episodes. So we may have talked about this before, and if we did and you pointed out to us, then we will send you a free autographed Rancor Pit trading card.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll pay the postage.
Well, let's not go too far.
I got some forever stamps burning a hole in my pocket. So. Just don't expect to get there in a hurry. We're our own bosses, after all. Yeah, so welcome
to... Wait, that would be R5D forever stamps.
Oh! Okay.
Right. We're on a roll tonight. Right.
Expect a lot more of this before, you know, you're going to think that we're real drunk after fake drunk earlier.
This is what happens when we record at nearly midnight when we should be in bed.
We should not be recording at this hour if we're not, recording with Stu Balk in Australia or something to accommodate him.
Oi!
Oh, yeah, yanks. It's already tomorrow here.
For the five people who get that.
Exactly. We really wanted to discuss this just amazingly iconic set piece.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's just it's your entree into the greater Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
You think about the nature of the Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. It's very true, because up until that point, the only thing you saw that was particularly alien were Dubaks, Jawas, and Sand People. And with the Sand People, you weren't even sure if they were even alien. They could have just been humans that were covered up.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they just were shy or something.
Yeah, so that was the only thing up at the top point that we had that was particularly alien. There wasn't any aliens running around the blockade runner.
Yeah, exactly. There were no alien rebels, no alien Imperials.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In fact, by and large, even back as far as the late 70s, the kind of fanboy speculation was that, you know, if you weren't human, you didn't get anywhere in the Empire.
Right.
And then that concept would be contradicted in the daily comic strip, and of course years later with characters like Thrawn.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here to talk about blue-skinned Imperial officers. We're here to talk about blue milk served from the head of IG-88.
Yes. By, who what's that character's name again? The Fred Flintstone guy behind the counter.
That was Wooher.
That's it. That's it.
Wooher Flintstone.
Well, prior to him serving the blue milk out of IG-88's upside-down head, I mean, there's an interesting thing about the cantina itself that I don't think a lot of us really stop to pause and think about. But I think this kind of speaks to the world that Lucas wanted to create. Obviously, the world he wanted to create it was something dirty and lived in and old and fallen apart. But what I think is a little bit intriguing about the cantina itself is when you approach it from the outside, it's very unassuming. No, it's,
wow, yeah.
It's very plain. There's a little lit thing above the door with a symbol that you assume it means, like, come get drinks here type thing. You know, like you'd see the universal symbol for male and female, you know, restrooms.
But 21 and over only.
Something to that effect. Now, unless that little pod that's off to the side with the things, you know, the red emblem thing on it, maybe that's an indication that this is a cantina. But it's like nothing really screams at you.
Pod that you mentioned is a speeder.
Is it? I've always wondered about that. I fear with the windows it was some sort of vehicle.
And I would love for Hasbro to make that.
Oh my gosh! I've always thought that. Because that was I know we're getting off the creature topic, but that was one of those things that, you know, I never saw really took notice as a kid until you started seeing, like, production photos, like in Starlog and other places.
Exactly.
And then you would see this little pod thing, and yeah, it's like, that would make a cool vehicle for the longtime diehard fans.
Exactly. Well, the thing about it is, we mentioned earlier about how it had come up that prior to the arrival at the spaceport, You don't really see that much that's, at least not this volume of intrinsically alien.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's, I think, to me, one of the master strokes is that even as they're driving up and into the handicap space, by the way, completely ignoring, you know, decorum. But, you know, as they're pulling in, then here comes a Jawa. So you're reestablishing that there is some diversity of creature species.
Yeah.
That not everybody's like a guy.
Yeah.
Or a girl.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you've got that little bit of familiar before you turn the corner into this rich environment.
Right, exactly.
That was, you know, was made even more rich by reshoots.
Right.
Go ahead.
Just real quick, you know, I was talking about the outside, the unassuming decor on the outside. When you think about other sci-fi movies or other movies in general, whether it's remember how the outside of the bar looked in Dusk Till Dawn? You know, it had like the big neon lights. It had the flashing, like, come here, the titty twister or whatever it was called. It's like in a sci-fi movie, you would think that the go-to for something like a cantina would have been something bright and neon-y, like in the prequels. Oh, like, exactly. Everything was like
corrugated steel walls.
Right, right.
A giant something, you know, maybe in an alien language or some kind of goings on or like, you know, big picture windows with dancing girls.
Yeah, but they go in the opposite direction and just give you something that doesn't look much different than the moisture farm that Luke is from.
Turns out that was Mos Eisley City Ordinance.
Uh-huh.
Just like Santa Fe, New Mexico, everything had to be Adobe.
Yeah, exactly.
The McDonald's, the Kmart, everything.
Or if you want to bring it closer to our home, you know, it would be like Waxahachie or right outside Waxahachie where everything was a dome. You know, everything was a dome house. A dome house, a dome garage, a dome storage unit. But
dome dog house.
But, you know, the thing about the location also, I just read this here recently, was I never knew this, that it was filmed in different locations. Like the outside, the exterior of the cantina was filmed in actually two different places, in Tunisia and a structure in a gym, AJIM. And then the interiors, part of the interiors, I just assumed were all filmed in the same place, like at Elstree, but part of it was filmed in Elstree. The close-ups were filmed at Hollywood Center Studios.
Yeah, in fact, that's partly just to get a lot of close-ups and pickups,
yeah.
But also because Lucas wasn't really happy with how alien the cantina was.
Yeah.
There's a great black and white production photo.
Yeah.
That really illustrates how minimally peopled the cantina was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost half and half humans and aliens.
Yeah.
And it's actually a rather remarkably small set on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
But then they go back to the States to do some reshoots and pickups and stuff. And that's where you get really almost half the alien creatures. A lot of them were off-the-shelf stuff from Rick Baker Studios.
Yeah.
And some were actually original designs by Ron Cobb, which were then translated, presumably by Baker.
Yeah.
Baker's staff into the physical aliens.
Right.
But, you know, it's really fascinating that, yeah, you have those two because the I think some of the alcoves would have been shot in California where the principal bar.
Yeah.
Was shot in Elstree.
Uh-huh. It's funny that you mentioned the off-the-shelf, like cobbling together whatever we have in our workshop type thing where you got these aliens. And I think when you look really closely at some of the aliens, you can see the ones that were kind of cobbled together and which ones maybe this guy worked on or I suppose this guy worked on these.
Yes.
You know, I remember hearing – now, Rick Baker, I should know this, but Rick – no, Stan Winston. Stan Winston did the Creatures and Gargoyles, the made-for-TV Bernie Casey movie. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so that was Stan Winston. He approached it the very same way. I remember when Colleen and I, you know, we had both seen it separately as kids growing up, but then decades pass and you don't see it again until, lo and behold, Colleen said, oh, do you remember this movie called Gargoyles? I was like, oh my gosh, yes. It scared the heck out of me as a kid. You know, we found it on DVD and ordered it.
I actually saw that when I was in the hospital recovering from tonsil.
Oh, that's awesome.
8 years old. I was rather old for that. But
yeah. But so, and I remember reading that. We both thought as well. You had Bernie Casey Gargoyle, which was amazing to look at. You know, when you, especially for a made-for-TV movie. As you look at each of the individual minions.
The rank and file gargoyles were kind of just like the slee stack were better.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but they were like almost like the Ugnaughts, but they all looked different from one another.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And it turned out that they did the same thing. Stan Winston, they put all their money into the Bernie Casey gargoyle, gave them the wings and all that, and they made them Jeepers Creepers before there was a Jeepers Creepers. but everyone else, they cobbled together what was like basically around the workshop. And that's basically what they did for some of these cantina creatures.
Right down to some of that moss that grows on cypress trees for fur.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because a lot of it, I mean, one of the things, like, that's why you have, like, these rat looking creatures a couple mm-hmm. of places, and you have the what I always called Grinning Devil Boy.
Yes. Right.
You see these, you know, masks and stuff that Baker and his studio had made. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like, Moma Nadon, my personal favorite, which I'll go on about for years. But he was, that particular character was designed by, there's a wonderful illustration by Ron Cobb that became that mask and hands and costume.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, character, the Duros characters were also designed by Cobb.
There was one that I found particularly interesting. It's, you know, you don't see much of him on screen, but Trento Duaba, also known as the Terminal Man, you know, where he's very skeletal looking, veiny, you know, sunken in cheeks and sunken in eyes.
Sort of space Frankenstein.
Well, it's funny that you say that phrase. Do you know the backstory? Is that why you said that?
Yeah, a little bit about. I know I'm partly familiar with the character and how it was developed.
Yeah, it was developed as one. It was one of the concept costumes for the Frankenstein's monster that they were working on a few years prior, and it got rejected, and they went with something completely different. And since he had this rejected piece lying around, they decided, well, let's get it out of mothballs and use it on the set.
Exactly. And there's a very similar mask that is largely obscured on screen, but it was you'll sometimes see it in, like, piles of the masks where they show the Rick Baker studio folks.
Yeah.
And a very similar kind of hard edge, you know, big bony face. And they put the crappiest mustache.
Really?
That just looks like it's glued on. He's often known as Fu Manchu.
Really?
But he's...
what's he officially known as?
In the list that I've seen, oftentimes he's simply called Unidentified Alien Number 2 or something like that. But I think he did finally get a name. But I read something about that very recently. And I... Oh, yes, it was...
Oh, I found it. Okay.
Connor Bakiska.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Fu Manchu. And he's basically at table with the character that was usually known as Brainiac.
Yeah, the sourpuss. Got the sourpuss look on his face.
Yes, and frowning. And Mom Vimdim, who I often call Biclops, because he reminds me of the Ray Harryhausen Cyclops.
Oh, I could definitely see that, but... He's
Sinbad
that, yeah.
Movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they literally refer to that previous character you're referring to as unidentified mustachioed individual.
Yes.
What in the heck?
Well, yeah, if you look at some of the pictures, it's just...
Why even bother putting that,
like,
mustache on him?
He's like... God-awful. Yeah, it's so obviously just sort of stuck on at the last minute, like some sort of community theater makeup job.
It's like he's the reject from a Freddie Prinze's reject from Chico and the Man or something. Wow. Oh yeah, he's way back there, but he's sitting in the background between Brainiac and the one horned horny guy.
Yeah, Bom Vimdim.
Bom Vimdim. Bom Dim Dim. Bom Dim Dim. Bom Vimdim. Oh, an interesting thing about Bom Vimdim, for those who are looking these up as we're talking, he's, of course, he's the one that has the tusk horn right in the middle of his head. On set, they referred to him as Don Rickles. And after I remember reading that, after I looked at it thinking, I could see Don Rickles in that.
Yeah, that's so funny. You could just see him, like, talking to Mustache there. Hey, Mustache, get out of the way, hockey puck.
So, yeah, I thought that's... So now every time I see that character, see the figure, I think, that's the Don Rickles alien.
Exactly. You can see him, like, hanging his coat on Moma Nadon's face. Oh, sorry, hockey puck, I thought you were a coat rack.
Yeah. Would have made him more interesting. Oh, my gosh.
Speaking to that... that entree into this alien world, the very first thing you see is what is the character's name? The species pops into my mind is an arcana. But that very first kind of anvil head, I always called it.
Oh, yeah.
Where this pops up.
Uh-huh.
Days on. And, you get this, like, glitter-eyed, anvil-headed thing that just...
What, say the name again for those who are looking it up, myself included.
Hemdazon, Hemdazon. And it's literally the first alien creature you see.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. It was puppeteered by Rick Baker, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Yeah, that's right, Hemdazon. That was always a cool-looking character to me. And it looks even cooler when you don't see it. Like, it's so shadowy when he pops up initially.
Yeah.
But when you see the actual mask itself or the action figure where you can actually look at the detail, it's a really cool design. It's a
it's a fun character, and it was just sort of puppeteered because the neck's about a little bit broader than your arm.
Uh-huh.
But, you just get this head that pops up out of nowhere, and that establishes, and it's just such a flat, broad face.
Uh-huh. So he was like the triumph of his day, insult comic dog of his day.
And just dropped the cigar on the way up.
Right. Yeah. But that was always a cool character. I did like that.
Yeah. And the another neat thing is, kind of going back to that Jawa out front, is there's at least one Jawa in the bar.
Yeah.
So apparently he'd scraped up enough money to get a good drink.
And it's odd. You would almost think, because the way that even Luke treats the Jawas out in the street, like they're, like they're selling chicle or something, they're just...
That's what that was. It wasn't back down. Tini. It was chicle.
Yeah, the little Mexican kids selling chicle in the streets of Mos Eisley, and I can get away with saying that. So, suck it, everyone who has a problem with it. You would think, because they're so looked down upon in Mos Eisley, that they would even be allowed in. Like, it would be...
Yeah.
Okay, take for instance, if you want to go classic Hollywood here, old Hollywood in your case.
Oh, yes, old Hollywood.
If we want, like, remember the scene in It's a Wonderful Life where George Bailey is in the time frame where he never existed, and then you have the old man who was the pharmacist, he became a drunk bum because he accidentally poisoned the kid, and George wasn't there to stop him. And, the moment he walks into the bar, they immediately start chastising him and making fun, pouring drinks on his head and all that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The way they treat him, that character in It's a Wonderful Life, you would think that's how they would treat the Jawas. Like, they weren't even, your kind's not welcome here, just like the droids, type of thing.
Well, you mentioned that, and I actually started thinking about when they don't want droids in here. That maybe they welcome Jawas in case the droids, get out of hand. any droids, we need to usher them out of here.
Right. It's not anything
they're like the droid bouncer.
Right, exactly.
And they just take them straight to the sandcrawler parked out back.
Uh-huh.
Like it never happened.
Yeah, the sandcrawler, or as Colleen put it just the other day at the Lone Star get-together, the rolling dumpster. And I thought, I've never thought of it as a rolling dumpster.
But it is, isn't it?
Where technically all dumpsters, well, not all dumpsters roll, I guess. Not all, some are just parked there. But, again, that was nothing I ever thought about as a kid, but as I got older and obsessed more and more about all the nuances and details of Star Wars, I always thought, why were Jawas even let in the first place? Well, that's just my thoughts on it.
It's very speciesist of you.
Right. Now, there's one character, the names for these. The alias on him is Crocker Number One.
Oh, yes, the Saurians.
Yeah. Now, these are Boss before we get to see Boss, is that correct?
That's always been my thought, and I believe that they are in wherever canon stands on these guys.
Yeah.
They were the same species.
Yeah.
Have even been one of the original masks repainted in a mustard yellow, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it would have to be, you would think.
And except actually, the big difference, of course, being nobody really caring that much. It's sort of like Stardates and Star Trek that were all over the map. That these guys did not have big, fat claw hands.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, it says here, now that I'm actually looking it up, because I was thinking, Bosk is a Trandoshan.
Oh, that's right. And these are Saurians or something.
And that's what got me thinking. I was like, well, no, it can't be Bosk, because he's a Trandoshan. And I just looked it up as we were talking. Saurian are a subspecies of Trandoshan. So they are
okay.
Like...
Okay. So they're...
They're cousins, too. So...
Well, that works. So that would explain why their hands were so much different.
Yeah.
They had people hands.
Right. People hands. That's always good to re-reference after years and years of JC podcasts. Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the interesting things is that probably, you know, almost more as filler, you had guys in spacesuits.
Oh, yeah.
There were several people in flight suits and space helmets and stuff like that. And I can't help but wonder if that was just so irksome. Uh-huh. To Lucas, that you know, here you've got like Grinning Devil Boy, and you got Hammerhead, and you've got as Catherine would say, Snugglefrew and Flim Flam, and then all of a sudden here's John Glenn. They're like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's like, are you talking about John Glenn? Are you talking about the guy who looks like he's a greaser from the 50s?
Not talking about John Glenn, the actual astronaut, but that was Boshek. Yeah.
Boshek.
The greaser astronaut that introduces.
I was like
Chewbacca.
Waiting for. Right. Yeah, he's talking to Obi-Wan. He, you know, motions to Chewbacca and steps aside so they can conduct business. I was like waiting for him to like jump up on the counter and start doing. I'm all shook up. Boo. Boo.
Grease Force Lightning. Yeah, it's back. It's back, folks.
Grease Force Lightning. Yeah, I mean, he's got the lamb chops going. He's got hair. I've never
thought of him as a greaser, but you're dead on.
Yeah. So, yeah, he had like that. It was almost like. It was like a rebel pilot outfit, but not. You know, it was just like, what do we have? Because he's got the rebel pilot vest.
Yeah,
and he's got the rebel pilot little straps.
The flight suit actually occurs all over the cantina.
Yeah.
A lot of your space helmet guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they took a lot of that from... You know, like off the rack from BBC.
Oh, they probably so,
like
because
or Blake 7 or stuff, where they kind of taken some basic flight suits and dyed them different colors and.
Right. They would have to. It is odd that he has like that basic, like stereotypical spaceman helmet.
Yes.
Like far out space nuts looking helmet.
Far out space nuts.
Yeah, I went there.
They've actually like. You know, glued some fiddly bits on it, but for the
There it is, fiddly bits. But yeah, whereas they really put all their time and effort into making the helmets that we would take note of, like the Rebel pilot helmets and everything else, and the Imperial helmets. Yeah, they just dialed it in with his helmet. There's really nothing special about it.
Yeah, the thing about it is. They kind of get away with a lot of this because it's all peppered in with these bizarre aliens. And so it's like pretty much anybody who's hunkered around the bar proper
mm-hmm.
or all the Brits, and then all the Americans come in on the alcove.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they got away with it because they never knew that decades later there'd be people like us, you know, dissecting every centimeter of every frame in the movie.
Just glad they got the damn movie done.
Right. It's like, no one's actually going to pay attention to these characters. No one's going to expect them to have names. No one's going to expect them to have backstories. But lo and behold, we have all of them.
Yeah, in fact, one of the funny things behind the scenes about Mos Eisley is, I'll have to see if I can scare some of these up, but there's some great, like, pictures where the kind of, you know, you press the plastic letters into the corduroy board.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, the old movie theater box office type boards.
Uh-huh.
That were put like police photo style in front of the actors in costume.
Yeah.
And that's where you, Kenner, for example, got all the names, like Snaggletooth, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That was the on-the-set name for the character.
Don Rickles.
Yeah, Don Rickles, exactly. And I think we talked about on the live show one time, talking about the action figures we'd love to see. The Tanika sisters were actually referred to as Star Whores.
Yeah, and I went searching for that production photo. I cannot find it.
I know, it's insane.
It's like, I can find out just about who's responsible for assassinating John F. Kennedy, but I can't find this production photo of the Tanika sisters. I mean, come on. I was like, I'm thinking, is this photo real or is it a figment?
Oh, wow. Yeah, right. The Star Wars figments crossover. Yeah, I need to see if I can dig that up, and if nothing else, try to get a shot. I think it appears in the massive tome, the Star Wars Chronicle.
Yeah.
Or Chronicles.
Yeah.
And see if I can, if that's going to be something we can actually achieve and prove the picture.
I know. There was another, what's his... the species that I thought was really cool. There's a couple of them that pop up in the cantina. The race is Morsarian. And they're the ones that have, like, the gas mask and then the long head.
You know, I was going to say something that we should explore in our conversation is favorites. And that's one that I zeroed in on as a kid.
Oh, me too.
Just
definitely
immediately. That just, oh my God, that's... And I didn't realize, even after going to see Star Wars 20 times in the theater as a kid,
yeah,
that that it had four arms.
Yeah, exactly. You don't get that in the movie because it's so quick. You only see them from, like, elbows up of the top set of arms.
Yeah.
When he turns to look.
But it's just such a clever looking thing because you've got this weird conical head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's a gas mask. You really don't know what these characters look like underneath.
Yeah, it's like that cornucopia head. And, yeah, the gas mask, the arms. Yeah, I was the same. I didn't realize. It probably wasn't until the action figure came out years, you know, later I realized they had multiple arms.
There's an image of some of the characters from the cantina that looks like it was drawn by a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And that you can actually, from that, tell that it was four-armed.
Oh,
there's
okay.
So many subtleties in these characters, like, you know, the head of the, what was the character's name, the Morrissean, that you don't really...
Well, I found the names. The one that turns and looks, the one that you see is Nabrum Leeds,
N-A-B-R-U-N,
and then the other one is Chal Bakan, C-H-A-L-L-B-E-K-A-N, Chal Bakan. That's apparently the other one that you see, but I was never aware that there was two in the Mos Eisley Cantina, unless I'm just drawing blank.
No, I wasn't either, but now it kind of inspires you when you see some of this stuff to try to get out and find, rewatch and scrutinize every last second of footage.
Yeah.
Because... one of the other cool things is the I've seen an imagery of the mask for Nabrum Leeds, and I always assumed it was like this big kind of exposed brain looking thing.
Yeah.
But the reality is it's weird kind of textured, like little groupings of almost like dashes, like lines that are embossed out of the top of the head or out of the skin. So it's actually much different than it plays on screen.
Right. It's interesting, the other, the first Morsarian, Chal Bakan, there's a screen, I found just now a screenshot of him in the cantina, because I was trying to think, okay, where does he appear? When he appears, in the background is this other human. It's basically in a white version of the Marty McFly plutonium suit.
Oh, but, okay.
Yeah, he's just got like a white, you know, plutonium type suit on. He's got a typical, like a stereotypical 60s sci-fi helmet, but, you know, the blast shield is just clear, so you can actually see his face. You can see he's a human. And I'm thinking, I've never even noticed that guy before. I mean, I barely realized that there was a second one of these creatures, and then you see the second creature, and then you realize that there's a guy behind him who I've never noticed. That's what I'm saying, like the cantina, I mean, good night. There's so many characters that are walking around. Even 4 decades later, you're seeing things that you hadn't seen in 40 years.
Oh, I know. And I remember going, you know, later viewings and trying to pick out more characters and more creatures and
right.
Try to figure out, well, what is that thing there? Is it a helmet or is that a weird head or what's going on with this?
I did the same thing. And, you know, for roughly 25 years, it was near impossible because all we had to work with were VHS tapes.
Yeah.
You know, it really wasn't until, I mean, of course, you would have production photos, and you had, you know, later on in the late 90s, early 2000s, you started having people able to get screenshots of things, but they were still grainy because for the most part, they were off the film or VHS. But, yeah, it wasn't until DVDs came out that I think we really were able to start pausing and zooming in and seeing
exactly.
Something with a little bit of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
Well, then you can't really talk about Mos Eisley Cantina, especially from the standpoint of George Lucas, without touching on the Wolfmen.
Yes.
Clearly something that was bothersome enough.
Right.
That something had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And they were disappeared in the special edition in the most awkward way possible. But, you know, for my money, the Wolfmen were very much or as much a part of everything that was there. I was never that bothered by the fact that you had two different types of Wolfman creature, too, you know, on top of everything.
Oh,
else.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one being, is it Aurelel Sokas, or how do you say the name?
I was like, I'm redoing my fake drunk. Shoes or something like that?
Yeah, the easy one is Lak Sivrak.
Yeah.
Because that's the one we kind of got more familiar with because of the action figure.
Yes, in fact, one of the things I think is hilarious is that the action figure of Lak Sivrak came out a couple of years before the action figure of the character that replaced him in the special edition.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that there's more merchandise based on the original actual Sice Noodles mm-hmm. than is based on the CG one.
Mm-hmm.
So it really speaks volumes to the fact that the fans prefer these characters, even if Lucas doesn't.
Right. It says here, I just looked this up because I was curious, they actually went, and in their backstory, they made each of the Wolfmen different actual species.
Yes. Yes, they did, because they are diverse, very different. If you really scrutinize them, all of their features are vastly different from one another.
Oh, yeah, right down to the ears. You know, like you have, you know, one has German Shepherd ears and the other has, like, you know, I don't know, collie ears. I don't know.
Collie ears.
I don't know. But, I just found a little bit more info on the radioactive suit guy. His name is Dans Borin.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and apparently he was a bounty hunter. This is his backstory. Is this Legends? I guess this is part of the Legends, not part of canon, obviously. Was a bounty hunter who worked for Jabba Desilik Tejeru. I don't know.
Yeah, it's important to say every name that.
Was that Jabba the Hutt? Is
yep,
that who?
That is Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, okay. Is that good night? I didn't know Jabba the Hutt had a full name like
yeah.
that. Yeah. Could have just said Jabba the Hutt.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of these things get a little pedantic on that score.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say. I was like, well, is he like a relative of Jabba? Is a Jabba like a common name in the Hutts? I don't know.
Kelly, like Bill or something.
Right, Bill the Hutt. I want someone to make that figure, exactly. Bill the Hutt. Yeah, the Wolfman, like it's just what you were saying. They were always so cool. That was one of the ones, I think I've said this before on the podcast, where 4-year-old me was just a bit terrified of the Wolfman.
Yeah.
You know, cause you can imagine a 4-year-old, you know, I was already like sensory overload, the wonderment of all these, getting hit left and right from all these creatures. But then you start throwing Wolfmen in there.
Yeah.
Like, hold on. You know, I'm expecting them to, like, you know, start fighting with one another at some point, you know, like. I mean, really, because, you know, when you see it for the first time, you're not knowing what to expect. 4-year-old me was thinking, as soon as Obi-Wan starts fighting everyone, I was like, those Wolfmen are coming for him. The moment they see him pull out that lightsaber. But I guess these are more passive Wolfmen.
Yeah, they're just kind of, you know, they teach their own.
They've been fixed.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit more subdued. They, as soon as Obi-Wan pulls out that lightsaber, they both just rolled over and exposed their bellies.
He's a good boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Well, speaking of contentious characters, we mentioned earlier this pair, because for, depending on who you ask, various reasons, there are no, you don't get to have, you'll probably never have action figures of the so-called Taneka sisters.
Yeah.
Who would then, according to at least pre-Disney backstory lore, were actually not really Taneka sisters after all. They were a couple of con artists posing as.
Oh, that's Taneka right.
Sisters. Yes. Yeah.
That's right. And where do they have proper names? One of them is like Kerr.
Yeah, they actually are two entirely different names and everything.
Oh, here it is. Karali Doolin is one of them. Yeah, I'm not sure of the other one.
Yeah, the other one alphabetically is about a mile away from the first.
Yeah. There was even speculation that there was. Oh, it says here that the alias is Star Horse. So you're.
Oh, there we are.
Right. This reference page actually says, as they list out the different aliases, Senny Taneka, Space Girl Number 2, and Star Whore. Yes. Is so yeah, at some point they must have had that, got a hold of that same photo. That's, it does exist.
Yeah.
So we're not making it up, people.
That's right. Damn it. But again, they kind of, I guess, sort of one-upped the idea of a human or humanoid character with them.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, it's that beehive hairdo going down.
Yeah. And their skin complexion is a bit pale.
Yeah.
Okay, so the sister, okay, one sister is Senny, S-E-N-N-I, the other is Bree.
Yeah.
Bria. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, that's a, you know, one of the things where once name inflation and backstories began to set in, where it really gets convoluted.
You can thank the 90s for that, because the moment Timothy Zahn's books hit big, and then they just said, let's start making Star Wars novels out the wazoo.
It's a combination of that, and honestly, I've always felt the bigger catalyst was the advent of the collectible card game.
That was going to be my other thing.
Because
was this,
at that point, suddenly you had to have names for everybody.
Yes, right.
It wasn't simply enough to call them Hammerhead or Star Whores.
Star Whores. Look at those couple of Star Whores.
That's right.
Your kind's not welcome here. Speaking of Hammerhead, you know, just to kind of get... We're still talking about Cantina creatures, but not so much talking about them on screen. And I know you won't fight me on having a little toy talk here. One of the coolest early things that we got in the form of toy was the Sears exclusive Cantina Adventure Kit.
Ah, yes.
In which case, you know, they listed... Because Kenner wanted to know the names of these characters, the only one that got their proper name on the package was Greedo.
Yes.
He's the only one. It's not like Reptilian Man, Hammerhead, Snaggletooth, and Walrus Man. It was like Greedo, and then however we described the rest of these people.
Yeah, and that's why I suggest that they were really pretty much probably going from those black and white photos.
Oh, exactly.
From the mugshots. And right. That's all they got. It's like, what is this character called? Oh, we just call him Hammerhead.
Yeah, that's what it says here in this photo, Hammerhead.
And nobody cared. You know?
Well, no. And as kids, it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, that was their name.
It was perfectly natural sort of thing.
Right. It didn't seem odd that Greedo wasn't named something that described his look.
Yeah, like...
Instead, he was just Greedo.
Fish face or something.
Right.
But then, you know, he was the
duck
only
lips.
One who but he was the only one who got an actual on-screen name. Nobody else is actually referred to by anyone as anything.
Exactly.
They're simply there.
Not Walrus Man, they don't call him by name before they slice off his arm.
Exactly. Hey, Walrus Man. Like,
right.
Hey, Kool-Aid.
And, of course, the Cantina set gave us the infamous Blue Snaggletooth.
The Blue Snaggletooth. Yes, indeed.
That dang Blue Snaggletooth.
And one of those weird things where they're like, that's not exactly what he looks like or anything. It was like a little person playing the character.
And he doesn't have go-go boots.
That's right.
And people hands.
What was so cool about the infamous Blue Snaggletooth was... how cleverly they went, the direction they took with the boots.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that he's got like this hoofy kind of boot, like it's sort of separated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like he's got hooves or he's got like one really big toe and maybe a couple of small ones. We'll never know, but it turns out that they decided instead just to give him furry feet,
mm-hmm.
not at all mm-hmm. people feet.
Mm hmm. And that Hammerhead figure was still such a unique action figure to have in 1978.
Well, for its time,
my gosh.
It was the most sophisticated character they ever did because they had to keep everything so simple.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that, you know, he's got the cool, like, weird Groot feet and the,
mm-hmm.
and the like, super veiny arms, and there's just so many
yeah.
subtle details they put in there to kind of make up for the simple tunic.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of speaking to the, give it a name, the set names, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a discussion one time about on-set names. There's a character I would have called Skullface.
Yeah,
I can't remember his name now, but it wasn't Dejus Pure. Dejus Pure is the just ebony jet black pointed eared bald character.
Oh yeah, he was another one that kind of creeped me out.
Yeah, because he was
like the black devil or something.
Exactly. Well, the eyes of the character stand out so because of just how dark black that it's like this weird.
It's like leathery looking face
because
it's like it's got that shine to it.
It's like a ironwood or something like that. That's just dark, dark black.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of a purple black. But again, that was one of those off the shelf masks. But this other character who's escaping me at the moment as far as his name, I'm trying to visualize the action figure packaging, ironically.
Yeah.
I remember seeing this discussion where somebody said, oh, yeah, oh, it was Ellis Hellrot. And, in fact, the aliases were Skullhead or Cull.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember somebody saying, oh, yeah, you know, if this was a, if they'd ever done it in the Vintage line, it would have been Scream Face.
Oh, the Scream looking character.
Yeah, and I thought, well, you're channeling about 10 years or 15 years later.
Right.
So, no, he wouldn't have been called Scream Face because no one was connecting Edvard Munch's The Scream with anything remotely looking like a warped skull.
Right.
But, you know, thanks for playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was really neat because later, you know, years later when I saw pictures of the actual mask, you don't realize that the lower jaw juts out quite a ways. It's got a tremendous underbite.
Well, it's a cool character and also because they didn't they played it simple with what he was wearing. So his face is stark white with these deep dark black eyes, these cavernous black hole eyes, and what he's wearing is something that just matches right with it, a black jumpsuit with a white sash cloak thing that drapes over his shoulders.
Yeah, it's the stylish little, what do you call that, like a tabe or something like that.
Right. It's they just keep it all like in the same color scheme.
Oh, and it's funny you talk about the costuming as well. I stumbled on a production shot. I need to try to dig back up of Lucas and others setting up a shot in the cantina, and Ariel Schuss looks like he's dressed to go to the football. He's just
really?
He's like wearing this jacket, like this windbreaker kind of thing. Like he's they got to see the football.
Like he's going to the first and 10 pub.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, ooh, the werewolves of London dressing in stylish jackets for in case you know, it gets a little cool out. And one of my other favorites was a character that would become known as Feltburn Travag.
I was just about to bring that. The two Godels. Is it Godel?
Yeah.
The species.
Speaking of underbites.
Uh-huh.
Just this picket of teeth and the dual horns and the kind of the mutton chop sideburns, the whole nine yards.
Uh-huh. That was always a kind of a cool looking character. Yeah, the teeth and the, you know, he in a weird sort of way because of his like beard looking thing and the eyes, he's kind of got like the King Leprechaun on Darby O'Gill. He's kind of got like that look.
You're brilliant, man. That's usually my job, is to make these deep cuts.
Anytime I can reference Darby O'Gill, which is probably like the fourth or fifth time I've done that on this podcast, I will. Well, he's got like that leprechaunish kind of like alien leprechaun look to him. He's got like he's got the mutton chops. He's got the beard. He's just got that look to him.
Yeah.
He's very leprechaun-y to me. And he's got the upside down stalactites, you know.
Yes.
Which one's okay? Also, is it stalagmites that come up?
Stalagmite is the lower one.
Okay, those are the ones that go upwards, stalagmites.
Yeah.
So he's got stalagmites coming
out of his head. The one that's dripping down and making the stalagmite.
Right.
Because I remember discovering that Scooby-Doo got it wrong.
Oh, yeah.
The big frogman broke off a stalagmite.
Mm-hmm.
And Casey Kasem referred to it as a stalactite. I'm sorry, Shaggy. Stalactites, stalactite-tite! I also want to point out that it would have been physically impossible for a human being to break off a stalagmite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That would be like, I don't know, like breaking apart a solid marble statue.
Right, exactly. What's cool about the Clone Wars is they were really good at bringing back all these cantina creatures back into proper stories in the Clone Wars episodes. I remember the Godels, their species show up in a few episodes.
Well, that was one of the really cool things, is that show drew from everything in sight, including a lot of unused production sketches and stuff as far as
creature
designs and what have you.
Yeah. So it was always cool to see characters like them pop back up and get, you know, some more canon stories, you know, under their belt.
Another neat thing is, you go places like, especially the Bothan Spy has a great forum that we're delving from heavily to look up stuff. And the people who've gone and just zeroed in on absolutely every single human and alien.
Yeah.
And the fact that Gabby Johnson from Blazing Saddles appears.
As who?
As Davelin Schmee.
Is that the guy with the Tom Selleck mustache?
No, it's just like this huge Grizzly Adams
beard
going on. Okay. He's kind of, as Wooher's talking to the Tanika sisters, he's kind of over the shoulder. And apparently maybe one of the also one of the henchmen that appears in the cut scene with Jabba that got poorly reconstructed.
What's his character's name again?
Like Davelin Schmee.
Okay.
Huh. But I just, looking at the picture, he struck me as sort of like, you could see him in the background talking to some of the other aliens going, that is some authentic Tatooine frontier gibberish.
Right. It really is. Another creature that gets absolutely no screen time, minus like maybe a second or two, but is a really cool looking design that I wish they kind of would have put more in the forefront, were the Lutrillian species. There was apparently two of them. They're the ones that almost look like little mole rats or something.
Oh yeah,
like a
I don't know if they were recycling the rat costume from Rock and Roll High School.
Oh my gosh! Whoa, there's something for the
rock. I'd have to see what the timing was on the two. I think Rock and Roll High School may have been after. But I remember reading an article about like this guy retrieving the rat costume from Rock and Roll High School from a dumpster because the production just threw it in the trash.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, he's these creatures, they kind of look like little rat things, you know. And they said you could tell the difference. I guess you could tell the difference that there was two of them because one's wearing an ascot and one isn't.
Well, there's a hooded rat, quite literally. There's one kind of wearing a hoodie.
There's a hood rat.
Yeah, it literally is a hood rat. And then there's one, you know, where the shape of the head is almost more like an otter. It's like the love child of otter and rat. And yeah. The other one's got the much more pointed nose. The character Rigesk is the hood rat. And I think that's the one where you see when Han kills Greedo. The one that goes,
bam! Yeah, yes.
But there's another rat creature out there as well.
He doesn't get much screen time at all.
No. And then the fact that, you know, those who have scrutinized all this and gathered together all of the...
He literally looks like one of the rats of Nim. He's all upright and everything. Yeah, because...
Or one of the ROUSs. Yeah, okay.
Right. Yeah. They don't exist.
Oh, thank goodness. But the fact that there are so many just little characters that people have managed to identify, and not only identify, but, you know, find production photos and stuff. But the character known as Snaggletooth, there are actually a couple of those creatures in the cantina.
Yeah. Well, one of them is next to the rat creature,
yeah.
Right? When he looks over, because he's the one you notice in that scene. Mm-hmm. You notice the snaggletooth. He's very Quasimodo-like. He kind of hunched over.
Yeah, there's one hunchback one and one not hunchback one.
Right, and then the rat creature is behind him, and that's why I never would notice the rat creature.
Yeah.
Regash, or whatever his name is, because you're looking at the snaggletooth.
Well, another personal favorite of mine was the character who would become known as Muftak.
Oh, yes.
It always struck me as having, like, these spider-like multiple eyes.
Yes. There's
a pair of bulbous eyes and a pair of kind of recessed eyes.
Mm-hmm. That literally was, as a kid, I know we make jokes that... what's his name is Space Yeti, but Muftak was one where I really kind of thought of him as like a Yeti type creature.
So he was the original Space Yeti.
He right. By the way, someone stole that from us.
Are you kidding?
Someone stole right the Space Yeti. I saw recently that someone was. Oh my gosh! I should have taken screenshots or something about it, but something that hit really big on the. It was getting shared around something or other, and like all these Star Wars, it was like a Star Wars, like a little, look, we came up, we're so genius, they took, what's his name, and they were referring to him as the Space Yeti, and people were like, oh, that's genius, we never thought of that. I was like, F y'all, we came up with that. And this is something like recent.
Yeah, we had the Space Yeti a year and a half ago.
Right. Oh my gosh, it literally like, and when the way they were describing this, and I can't remember if it was like, and they had made like a, they had drawn up like this thing, like, you know, basically like they took the photo and digitized it to make it look like it was a drawing that they did, and they added in stuff.
Yeah.
And they were like, it was like, they stole our idea. They even said at one point, this is Space Yeti approved, and I was like, I used that for one of our Rancor things where I had the Space Yeti at the bottom and I said Space Yeti approved. And I'm thinking, these fools stole from us.
Won't be the first time either.
I know, but it was like, this one was like blatantly Rancor ripped off. It was crazy. I wish I had just screenshot it or tagged you in it or something. I don't know why I didn't. Now I'm regretting it.
And then I referred to Bomb Vimdim as the Biclops, but there was actually a Cyclops.
That's right. Oh, just real quick on Muftak, because brought that up.
Yeah, so Muftak.
I was all butthurt about it getting stolen from us. Yeah, he was always a cool one, because he had like the spidery eyes,
mm-hmm.
But then I always like the upper eyes were more gentle looking. Like he had like,
yeah,
like the like upper the, eyes were like
the good eye and the evil eye.
Right, and then he had, but you're right, and then he had like the little fly sucker coming out,
a cigar or.
I always have figured that was something like what a fly would do, like it would kind of like...
Yeah, like a proboscis. It would,
yeah, there you go. I couldn't think of the
thing. You'd go and like vomit over a box of donuts like like Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum style. Well, in the meantime, Gina Davis is off in the corner as one of the Muftak, not the Muftak, one of the sisters, the Tanika sisters.
Telling Wooher to be afraid, be very afraid.
Right. What are you talking about? Get out of here.
Afraid of anything but droids.
That's it. He's afraid of droids. Bad experience with a droid when he was a kid. Oh my gosh. Show me on the astromech where they hurt you, Woofard.
Myo, M-Y-O. It was the big green the green Cyclops character that had a little beard that parted in the middle.
Did he have like a white beard or something?
Yeah, if I remember like tufts of white hair underneath each side of the jaw. Uh-huh. And I like the fact that he's kind of like vaguely reptilian, the very textured skin, and this big white eye with a vertical slit for a
mm-hmm. Yeah, almost reptilian. Mm-hmm. It says here one of his aliases is Psy-Eyed. So it was almost like Cyclops Eyes.
Yes.
Like they, so that was one of his aliases instead of just being Myo. That yeah, that well, that
I don't
was
want to call
cool
him
one.
Old One Eye because then you're right. A bit after dark there.
Right, the one was it. Yeah, that was cool, and he was kind of sharply dressed.
Yeah.
If you think about it, he had the nice little, nicely pressed, no wrinkles, you know, no rips, stains, or tears in his little tunic there.
And then we have to talk. We cannot talk about Mos Eisley Cantina without mentioning one of the most bizarre ass characters in all of Star Wars. Because you suddenly want to be like Chef in South Park, you're like, what the hell is that? It doesn't look like anything. What is that supposed to be? And that is none other than Dice Ebagon, which, when charged with bringing this character to life as an action figure, Hasbro did a brilliant job by like giving this sort of serpentine body with some weird ass legs.
Oh, you're talking about the thing that looks kind of like it would be the cousin to the trash compactor monster.
Exactly. That it's just like, what is this worm that suddenly popped up in front of the Wolfman?
So you're referring to Andrew Dice Ebagon Clayton, right?
Yes.
He was a comedian there on Mos Eisley.
Yeah, he needs somebody else to put a cigarette behind his head so he can. Because he didn't have, poor little thing, didn't have any hands.
Right. He was a living hand. He was just an alien hand. He was like the cousin It of Star Wars.
Simply known as Snakehead on the set, or Nake. So apparently, like Skullhead or Call, they would just get
Nake. Did they just drop the S?
Yeah,
S is
the
silent.
Skullhead, they called Call. They just drop S's and stuff.
Good night.
Yeah, it's just some lazy writing.
Yeah, he was always a cool one, you know. Where and they replaced him too, didn't they, in the special edition?
No, they just had him pop up in front of the Elephant Boy instead of.
Okay, Elephant Boy replaced the Wolfman.
He
is that
replaced,
right?
Lax Sivrak, and Errol Shoes. No, yeah, and Errol Shoes was replaced by Foppish Hat Lizard.
Yes, oh yes.
Which were, to make things even worse, they were the same mask.
I love how we're like, coming up with names similar to Snaggletooth and Hammerhead. It's just Floppish Hat Lizard.
Floppish Hat Lizard was actually the back of the mask of Catwall. So if you look at the elephantine one.
Yeah.
Look at the back of the head.
No way.
Yo, yeah.
Seriously?
They got cheap on us, Dodgson.
Wow.
Yeah, it's hard to find good pictures of it, but you can tell that if you just put a foppish hat and took the tusks off.
Yeah.
And angled the back of his head downward. The eyes are the same. The kind of line from where the tusks are up through the back of the head becomes the mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, some pictures aren't that great for this, but in fact, in the action figure, I was surprised they didn't just do the same thing.
Right.
They've never given us Foppish Hat Lizard, whatever his name is. Milos. So if you look at the Milos character, you can tell that it's the back of the same mask. That's
right.
Just ridiculously bad.
Should we talk about, you know, when they asked the question in the real cantina, would the real Walrus Man please stand up? You have the Walrus Man who loses an arm, and then you have what should be Walrus Man but wasn't. Instead, he was briefly Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, I know. I always thought I would have called that Walrus Man. I always thought that Walrus Man looked more like a spider, like a spider pedipalps.
Right.
And see that when you go into episode one, the way they took the Aqualish and gave them like four eyes and big spider fang things going on. So somebody recognized it the way I did. But yeah, that's a good point.
What's his name? Taos Ka, or how do you say?
Yeah, because there were several of that species running around.
Yeah, but this particular one was in the cantina. Yeah. Yeah, you do see some on the streets of, most likely, I think.
Except Benid actually passes Luke and Obi-Wan heading toward the,
yes,
leaving the docking bay, and became the template for Marvel's version.
Yes, of Jabba the Hutt.
There's two, there's at least a couple of those, like you say, that what should have been Walrus Man.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another very similar species, often referred to as hair mouse, because there's one sitting in the cantina where he's got like just the whitest ass hips, and it's not just jodhpurs. It's, I mean, this is some serious.
Are you serious?
Yeah, the pictures are hilarious when you see the character in costume.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
Man, this is like, make some space here, because. It's like the wide ends from Saturday Night Live. Yeah, Taos Khan is one, and then there's another with a knot top going on.
Yeah, really, that's right. Yeah,
like, almost like the actor was trying to ad lib that character being drunk because he's a little tipsy looking.
Right. Yeah, what was the name of that one? So
I was trying to see if I could track that one down, but I haven't spotted it yet in the rundowns that I'm looking at. But it's too prominent not to be in here.
Yeah.
And the fact that there are several Rodians, there's more than just Greedo.
I wanted to talk about that, because it wasn't until I started investigating that a little bit further for this particular episode that all these years, I assumed that the Rodian looking over his shoulder,
yeah,
was Greedo, like, taking note of who was entering in. And it's not Greedo. It's Neesh.
Mm-hmm.
It's a character called Neesh. And then one of the other Rodians has got a name that's similar to Greedo, but I can't remember it right off. It's like Nito.
Well, there was actually a character that appears in Return of the Jedi that became referred to as Beedo.
Oh, okay. I think that's what it was. It was Beedo. But, okay, here it is. Rodian number two. Oh, Rodian number two, yeah, it's the same one that I just said, Neesh.
Yeah.
He's also known as Breedo. He's one that looks over his shoulder. Then Rodian number three is also... Well, that doesn't make sense. They're referring to him as Breedo as well, but also unidentified Rodian. But that looks like Greedo, because it's like he's wearing the same thing. I think this website's confused.
Yeah, like, I couldn't find Knot Top either.
Yeah,
Knot
Top. Well, if we're looking at the same website, you realize there's three pages.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, there's
kind of tapered out there, Cole.
At first I wasn't sure, because their list ended up with Zootin.
Yeah.
The little Snaggletooth Zootin. Then I realized you click on page two and then page three. I was like, oh, there's more pages. I was like, I just assumed Z was the end of the alphabet in their world. Apparently not. So, yeah, Knot Top Head may be very well in there. But, yeah, it's so bizarre. It's like mind blown. I thought that was Greedo.
Yeah.
And then to find out it's not. It's Torpedo, Dorito, Mosquito, or somebody else. But, oh, I wouldn't bother. Just on a side note, there's not a whole lot on pages two and three. They just go on. Oh, and on.
By the way, why then there is?
Oh,
Athlo, Athloe.
Okay, I wanted to bring them up earlier because there's two.
Yeah, there's Onelko.
Those were the ones I was talking about earlier, where one of them had an ascot and the other wasn't.
Yeah.
So Athelo was the one. With the white ass hips.
Onelko. I had a friend who used to work for Onelko.
Onelko.
Yeah, and then this other Rodian is the Thuku. Because he's Thuku for Cocoa Puffs.
On the Lutrillians, Onelko is the one that's wearing the ascot, I believe.
Yes.
And Othello is the one that, if he was taking a flight on American Airlines, they would charge him for two seats.
Yes, exactly.
Basically.
I mean. He's got some serious hip action, but you actually see him on the streets of Mos Eisley.
That's right. He's got some birthing hips there.
God. And another one of my personal favorites is the character known as Kabe or Cabe.
Yeah. Oh, I love. I always said Kabe because I would always say it was Muftop, and Kabe. You know, when they came out, the little Tupac figures. Yeah, I always said Kabe, but I guess it could be Cabe as well.
But always, that was just so cool because it's.
Oh, there's Not Top.
Yeah, it turns out Mosep Benid was the Not Top.
Yeah, and Mosep Benid. And I was like, well, we should have known that. Good night. And then the other one was like.
It's not as obvious in some pictures. And yeah, the other one's Ka Twas. Ka! Ka!
Yeah, he's the one. He's the one that decided to cut off the Knot Top and just go full on Mr. Clean.
Yeah, he's going to be. That way he would. Plus, he's got like. I think he has kind of. He's a ginger. He's got the red. He's the one you see coming out of the spaceport or the docking bay area. And he's got the sport and some really bright red whiskers.
What about the insect looking ones? Like there was that wheel sleigh, or how do you say that?
Well, in the cantina itself, it's very hard to find. Is
yeah, the fly.
Yeah, aka the fly.
Right. Yeah, he. You barely see him like for like a millisecond.
Mm-hmm. Much like and the his arch nemesis, Kidd-Kidd-Kak, the giant ass praying mantis, which I believe Jack Purvis puppeted under the dress.
The big praying mantis is a little bit easier to spot.
Yeah, there's a couple of shots where you can kind of see the creepy praying mantis head kind of bobbing around. But the Weasley who you're talking about was the speeder dealer.
Speeder dealer, really?
Yeah, that's who they sell Luke's speeder to, is Weasley.
Oh, that's right.
And what's really weird is Weasley is dressed like, is doing an Obi-Wan Kenobi cosplay.
Yeah, he is.
And has like eyeballs just like, randomly stuck all over this melon head. And what was really cool with the action figure that Kenner or Hasbro did was they gave him a cloth, or her rather, a cloth costume, which meant you could draw the hood back, and they put weird-ass eyes everywhere.
Wow, that's weird. So it's almost like, you know, like, you open up a carton of ice cream and the chocolate chips are just kind of like everywhere in the ice cream.
They're literally an eyes cream.
Cream. Right. Okay,
The characters we have to talk about, because they are prominent, they're a very important part of what you see on screen, and that is the Bith. The modal nodes, Figrin Dan, the so-called, as we knew back then, simply the Cantina Band.
Yeah.
Because essentially they just struck them all from the same mold. Heads, hands, the whole thing. And they're all wearing basically the same costume. The only distinguishing feature is each has their own unique instrument. And what's really cool is one of their species, is also just simply a cantina patron, again, cosplaying as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Because how many are in the band itself? Is it five?
There's a lot of conjecture there.
Because I've heard five and I've heard seven. But I've never... Because when they came out with the...
Five to seven... As few as four, actually, and as many as seven.
Yeah, I always had it in my mind that there was five of them. I don't know.
I think that's because Hasbro went that route, both in 3¾ and 5 and 12-inch scale. But
there's could be as many as seven, and that does not include the one that dresses Obi-Wan, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, he was sort of sitting it out.
Because you see five of them. for sure, you see five of them with instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And you're assuming that the fifth one, that's an instrument, not just like a little...
Well, in one of the actual shots from the screenshot, mm-hmm. there are six visible Cantina band members.
Uh-huh.
Supposedly, there's a seventh in there as well. Oh, yes, actually, in that image, you can see all seven.
Yeah, you see all seven in one particular image. You got the one sitting down doing the wicka wicka what, you know, on his little turntable.
Yeah.
Then you got the long
instrument
flute.
In the back that you never really get to see on screen. There's like some kind of big elaborate drum kit back there.
Right. So there would be seven.
Yeah, and then there's Ichabel Gaunt, who's kind of mm-hmm. obscured in the background. He's sort of like the bassist or something. You know, nobody cares.
He's the one. Yeah, you see him. Okay, you got the two forefront that are, you know, blowing into their machines, Nanal Chell and Tiden Dahai. Ichabel Crane Gaunt is the one that you kind of see between them, kind of back and forth. And then, yeah, you got the one who's playing like the drum sets.
Yeah, Tech Mar. And then Doink Naatz has the really long wind
yeah.
instrument.
Like he's got the Australian didgeridoo or something. Yeah.
It's a didgeridoo.
Yeah, there you go. I knew I was saying it wrong, but
that's hilarious.
So yeah, you got the guy on the turntable. Yeah, you got the one going.
Yeah, and then you got the guy with your sampling.
Yeah.
I want the knife.
Good. Okay, I think the Rancor Pit officially gets behind the idea of seven band members.
Yeah, I think I can now officially say there were seven. I'm going to back that wholeheartedly. So
right.
we're looking at, seven Cantina band. That was actually ultimately becomes a very chock-a-block full of characters.
So then the one that's sitting between Blackface and Muftok.
It's just like another of the species. And I always thought that was a clever idea, or he was their manager. It's like Rob...
I was going to say, he's either a roadie or he's a fangirl. You know, he's
okay.
like.
Oh, or I thought maybe right. it was like a, I'm with the band.
Yeah, but it could be a female.
Yeah, that's true. Or it could be like the Reuben Kincaid of the modal nodes.
Explain that. Who's Reuben Kincaid?
He was the manager for the Partridge Family.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So, yeah.
And I think we've pretty much covered the bulk of the characters. There's one, like, bulbous, bald-headed chick with a braid that came... There was actually an action figure of her.
And you're talking about the Bernadette Peters?
Yeah, girl? And I'm like, where the hell? And sure enough, she's in there, and I've actually spotted her on screen and later... viewings, and that amazes me how much stuff was going on that you never noticed.
Right, exactly. Well, when you take away the humanoid, when just the regular human characters, you know, the men and the women just kind of fiddling about, because, you know, in all honesty, they're not as interesting, because we're talking about actual creatures.
Yeah.
When you take all of them out, I think we've got it covered as far as, like, actual creatures.
Mm-hmm. As well as some notable humans we had to bring up. And I think the only other one we really didn't give any mention of is one Dr. Cornelius Evison.
Yeah, because he's so messed up, he's probably...
He's like...
You can't count him as human.
Yeah, he's sort of like right in between the two.
And, we talked about the Duros, correct?
Yeah, we kind of mentioned them in talking about the Ron Cobb designs.
Oh,
and
yes,
then the character
right.
known as Miam Onith, who is there with the Gotal Feltprintravag.
Oh, is that with the long sucker snout?
Yeah, a.k.a. Yamhead, as the character was known on screen.
Yam Nose.
I mean, that's right, Yam Nose.
Yam Nose.
And I think,
I forgot about him.
Yeah,
he has like the big mosquito,
that's
thing.
Right.
Oh,
yeah,
her.
It turned out it was a her, and they were having some sort of tryst or something, which, you know, makes it even worse. When you think about it.
It says here that was another Rick Baker design.
Yeah. And I guess the only other character that we hadn't mentioned that stands out is the pipe smoker. The hookah.
No, the cool the
the
beatnik.
hipster, yeah, with their really bad nose problem.
Right.
And I guess, you know, we keep mentioning people hands, or I have.
Oh,
Yeah.
we didn't talk about the devil, did
Well, I
we?
mentioned Grin and Devil Boy.
Oh,
That's
you
my,
did.
yeah,
That's right.
the,
I mean, that's a
yeah.
creeper. I mean, that is as much as the Wolfman kind of set me off a bit. I mean, I say, you know, like, you know, I tell the story. I'm going to tell it briefly again how, you know, my aunt and uncle took Vic and I to the drive-in theater. And Star Wars was playing in Spanish, but we had already seen it a handful of times, so we were kind of new. We knew the lines, so it was cool. We got to see it again, so no big deal. We just got to see it in Spanish, even though we didn't speak Spanish. I remember, you know, he had pulled his truck up, and we were all sitting in the back of the truck, and other people were kind of out sitting on lawn chairs and what all. Being this particular part of Dallas, let's just say the Hispanic community was, you know,
Yep.
prominent. And when that part came up, I remember hearing a little kid, El Diablo! El Diablo! Mama! Mama! El Diablo! Kid freaked out, thought that the devil was coming for his soul when that thing popped up.
Space devils.
Oh, space devil. Yeah, so El Diablo
Wow, that's
made
amazing.
appearance. Yeah, but yeah, I guess we get all the aliens. I'm trying to like
I
just do a
know.
quick check here. We got Skull Face, we got the Bith, we got yeah. I think yeah. What was up with the smoker guy? Degenic Danik
Yeah.
Jericho. He got his own figure?
Yeah.
I mean, that was bizarre. That ranks literally ranks right up there with Ice Cream Maker Man. That if you're gonna make that figure, come on. We get that figure, but you can't make all the cool looking creatures
Exactly.
from Maz Kanata's castle.
Well, I think, in all fairness to Maz Kanata's cat, or you know, the production of such characters, it's getting to the point now with so many movies and so many characters, it's
Right.
almost impossible.
That's the downside to a new movie coming out every year.
Exactly, is that now we're going to have to. It's getting harder for them to pick and choose what to come out with every year.
Exactly.
Plus, operating two distinct lines that are almost identical in price point.
Oh, you know what? There is one alien that appears in the cantina. That's a creature that we have not
Huh.
discussed. The last one on our list, we need to bring it up because he's the one featured most prominently, and that's Chewbacca.
Of course. You know, I thought about Chewbacca earlier and then just kind of glossed over talking about all the other aliens. But yes, that is your introduction to Chewbacca occurs there.
Well, it's a big one because we got to see Chewbacca in the trailer, and I'm sure just like you, me as a kid couldn't wait for the Bigfoot to make his appearance. So when you think about how far into the movie the cantina scene
Yeah.
is, I'm anxiously awaiting this big hairy creature to come out. So when we get to the cantina, I'm bombarded with all these aliens, and then lo and behold, there he is. It's Space Bigfoot. I mean, finally, I get to see my Space Bigfoot, and talk about living up to everything you hope he would be, and
Oh,
then
yeah.
some. So yeah, we got to say, we got to bring up old
Yeah, I
Chewie.
mean, you got to give Chewie the love. So, well, this has been an extra long, extra big episode, but we had a lot to talk about, a lot of ground to cover, and just one of those stellar aspects of the Star Wars universe to discuss because,
It's one of our
personally,
favorites. I
yeah,
mean,
that's right. It's
without a
just
doubt.
all-time great scenes and everything. And in closing, because we really need to get on out of here, my favorite cantina creature is certainly well documented as none other than Mon Mothma, aka Hammerhead. I was actually at the the Star Wars figure collectors group, I was telling somebody that I was trying to rattle off every single Hammerhead anything that I have, which is darn near everything ever made.
Yeah.
So, Eddie, did you have, other than Space Bigfoot, of course?
Hammerhead is actually my second favorite, without a doubt. Without a doubt. It's a very close favorite to my choice, which, oddly enough, was just the subject of the live show that I was not on. And that would have been Greedo.
I may have like bumped that to a later episode, but for our Greedo, for lack of a better word, is good episode.
But that's okay. I'll give some Greedo some love right now, and it'll make up for that. Greedo is definitely my favorite. I mean, from moment one where he appears on the screen, apparently not, because now I discovered that's not Greedo looking over his shoulder.
Exactly.
But the fact that I saw this Rodian, and I see the design, I see the big ominous eyes and the textured skin, and it was just a cool looking alien. It was just so cool. And then you move forward a few minutes into the movie, and then his interaction with Han Solo. Well, number one, Han Solo immediately became the coolest dude you've ever seen in a movie ever. And then he proves it just minutes later by taking out Greedo.
Yeah.
I just love the character. I know he gets made fun of a lot because the way he went out, you know, like he's the bounty hunter that couldn't pull off the job.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, yeah, everyone has a bad day. That was Greedo's mm-hmm. bad day. Unfortunately, it ended in him dying.
Yeah.
But we don't know Greedo's career. He was working for Jabba for a reason. So he must have been good at his job if Jabba was going to employ him.
Well, that and Jabba's none too thrilled about it.
Yeah.
When he had an Irish accent, he's like, oh, you had the fry poor Greedo like that. That was sort of like the Irish-Italian. I don't know what that was.
I don't know. But, yeah, Greedo would definitely be my favorite. I remember that was the action figure that I desperately wanted.
Oh, that's so funny, because we talked about on the live show about how that was my favorite other favorite action figure, because it was just...
Right, but that's the figure I never got. It eluded me all throughout my childhood. You would think it wouldn't, but it did. And just as an adult, it's just, you know, it was one of those things where I could have gone out and gotten it for as many conventions as I went to over the 80s and 90s. I could have gotten it, but it was always one of those things where I would see it and it was usually overpriced and I knew it.
Yeah.
Or it was always beat to heck. And I was like, if I'm going to get one, I'm going to get one that looks nice, that's displayable.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those things that never seemed to work out. And then lo and behold, I think Colleen and I had been married maybe 3-4 years into our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we do is we do stocking exchanges on Christmas Eve, and then we do proper gifts on Christmas morning. Well, we did the stockings, and lo and behold, what was in my stocking was a mint vintage Greedo with blaster.
Wow.
So yeah, I was finally got my Greedo, but Greedo for sure is my favorite. Hammerhead is, man, a close second.
It's just such a distinctive design.
Right.
I think that's why it became so timeless. I mean, as we're speaking, I'm just like surrounded by hammerheads. Gentle Giant massive vintage, my original vintage that I had growing up, mm-hmm. A Lego Ithorian, a little Micro Machines.
Right.
A Mighty Beans.
Well, just, yeah, exactly. Yeah, your love
Tactics.
Of... Tactics. Oh my gosh.
Hallmark ornaments. It's amazing. And the Sideshow 12-inch figure.
Is it safe to say that Greedo would be your close second?
Oh, absolutely. I think
so. Well, that's what's so funny about this. It's like we're reverse. But, you know, and I'm sure you could agree with this, like Greedo and Hammerhead, for me, and I suspect for you as well, is just the Cantina Creature version of Luke and Han, because I love them both.
Oh,
and I just,
yeah.
Like, I just love one just a little bit more. Like,
that's right.
I love the Luke character just a little bit more than Han Solo. And
yeah, then it becomes tenuous after that. There's just too many really cool ones to
right.
pinpoint.
So in that respect, they very much are the Cantina Creature Han and Luke.
I never thought of it that way, but you're on the money.
So that's my closing thought on the whole subject.
That's a perfect place to say goodbye to the Mos Eisley Cantina, where everybody knew your name even when you didn't have one. Or your name was Yamface.
I love that you brought that up, because earlier, as we were getting ready for this, I thought, you know, the Cantina literally is Space Cheers.
Yes.
To the point where I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I actually had the time to do this, but I'm so behind on everything illustration-wise, to actually draw out a thing of the Cantina creatures, like the Cheers characters, but instead of saying Cheers, it just says Cantina in that font.
Oh, that would be fun. Well,
that would be cool. That
we'll announce it here now, and 3 or 4 years from now, we'll...
Right. It's on my to-do list of things that I'm not getting paid for that never gets done because I'm not getting paid for them. Oh, gosh.
And with that, we will say farewell. We'll be back in early August with some incredible Simple Tricks and Nonsense, because we are going to be celebrating 75 episodes of this show.
Yes. And then hopefully...
77 if you count those first two, but they don't count because we're talking about from the time that Eddie joined me and made this into something, 75 episodes, and on the live show in August, 100 episodes over on DallasOnAir.com.
Well, it's kind of cool because when you add in all the live appearance recordings we've done, it really puts us at 200 altogether. It's easily there's been a couple of dozen of those that we've done over the past few years at conventions. So it's and then of course if we could stay on target, if we could stay on target, then in a mere half year, we'll be celebrating 100 pre-recorded audio shows. If we could just stay on target.
Well, the 4th of July helped bump us up, and we're just going to keep on. We're going to try to do what we've been promising for a while and getting back into a couple of times a month having the pre-recorded show. And you're right. Yeah, this is not going to be long before it's up to 100 episodes as well.
My math is off. No, we do this twice a month, so technically in a year, we'll be celebrating 100 episodes.
Unless we just get really wild here and do some periods where we have do even more episodes.
Yeah, I won't hold my breath on that one.
good idea. Well, thank you very much for 75 amazing episodes, for taking this from the half-hour rant that it began... And that fateful not getting around to talking about Disney buying Lucasfilm. It would have been the lost in my head third episode.
Yes.
And this has just been amazing. Because of this show, we have 100 episodes of the live show as well.
Yes, it's been amazing. And I'm looking forward to the next 100 live shows and the next 75 pre-recorded shows and then some.
Absolutely. And thank you to everybody who's been listening to us, following us all these years. It's been an amazing ride, and we're not ready to get off this ship yet.
Heck no, not at all. This awesome music is provided by Ray Reezy. That's R-E-Y-R-Z-Y. You can find him on Instagram and SoundCloud. On Instagram, it's at R-E-Y-R-Z-Y. And on SoundCloud, it's soundcloud.com/R-E-Y-R-Z-Y. You can also contact him at rayreezymusic@gmail.com. Make sure you check out this guy's stuff. It's really awesome. Thanks for listening, and may the Force be with you.